Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I work on the search and rescue team, and I have a very interesting case to share with you. I know I'm not allowed to normally discuss this stuff, but I believe that this missing case might be the work of an alien abduction. It all began when I received a frantic call from a mother about her missing daughter. They were camping just outside of Bend, Oregon. I rushed to meet them at their campsite. The family had been staying there for a few days, and on that particular morning, the mother and father went down to the river while their daughter climbed into one of the riverside trees to get a better view of the scenery. That was the last anyone saw of her. She disappeared without a trace. The mother frantically searched for her, but there was no sign that she had fallen or ever come down from where she was. The family became grief-stricken and panicked, finally calling us for help. We searched all around the area for any clues, but couldn't find anything. The whole day passed, and as evening approached, we expanded our search party, but still, there was no trace of her. Even the dogs couldn't pick up on her scent. Eventually, the helicopter located her about 12 miles north of the location where she had gone missing. Miraculously, she was completely fine, unharmed, and unscathed. The dogs helped lead us to her, but when we found her, she was in a state of complete and utter terror. She was rocking back and forth, murmuring strange things, We asked if she was okay, but she didn't reply. She was taken back to her family, but her expression remained unchanged. She never gave us any concrete answers about what had happened to her, just murmuring about being taken and not being allowed to leave. It was puzzling how she had traveled such a distance in such a short amount of time. The terrain between her and where she was found was rough and challenging, yet she was unscathed in her outfit and flip-flops. It simply didn't make any sense. I can't help but think that something extraordinary happened to her, and part of me wants to believe it was aliens. It's the only thing that seems to explain everything. But, of course, I could be wrong. We may never know the truth behind what happened that day, but the poor girl was clearly frightened by something or someone that took her and transported her over a vast distance in the blink of an eye. My mom grew up in Ontario, California. Back then, most of Ontario was eucalyptus and orange groves. She was spending the night with a friend one night as they were watching the sky and the eucalyptus trees, when an entire family of squatches. She said there was what looked like a large male, a female, and an adolescent. This would have been back around 1953 or so. I've only found one other story from the area, I believe. It was at what used to be Ontario Motor Speedway, and everyone had seen it, on the other side of the track, where it was overgrown. It was in the papers, I think. I'd have to dig deeper. I was fighting a wildfire with a Native American hotshot crew in 2001, would be impolite to say which crew it was. Anyway, this happened in northern Montana on the Canadian border. 20 minutes helicopter ride from nearest road. They asked to be removed from duty because they saw Bigfoot's nest, according to them. We went later the next day to see what spooked them, and it was a weird lean-to in a really deep, heavily covered draw the fire had jumped. Nobody asked any questions or made fun. They weren't joking around, and to their belief system, as I understand, it was a big deal. The spot def had a strange vibe. Something big had bed down there and weaved branches into a large 5-10 foot diameter rough nest. So I ride to work on my bike very early in the morning, about 03:30. Bicycle, to be clear. The last few nights, something very unsettling has been happening. As soon as there are no cars in view of me front or back, all of the wildlife, i.e. crickets, frogs, etc., just stop making any noise altogether. And I will get a seriously bad feeling like something is watching me. Hair standing on the back of my neck and chills down my spine kind of thing. In addition, I have heard what I can only describe as a horse galloping with fleshy hands instead of hooves. Last night I thought I saw some kind of silhouette next to a tree. And then two bright silver, yellow eyes peered back at me at what seemed to be somewhere between 6-7 feet high. I nearly shit myself and just pedaled as fast as I could, trying not to think about it, but I know I saw something, and I know what I'm hearing isn't just paranoia. Am I crazy? Does something not exist that matches this description? I'm not one to believe in the paranormal or cryptids or anything really. But ever since I've moved to Utah a few weeks back, I've been seeing and hearing some shit I just can't explain, and it's got me weirded the F out. This most of all. I was born in 1976 in Dayton, Ohio, and shared a room with my brother for several years. This event took place when I was in my bog bed. So I must have been at least 5-6 years old. My brother had one side of the room, and I had the other. We had a very large walk-in closet, and the door to it was at the foot of my bed. One night as I was trying to get to sleep, my brother was already asleep. The door opened, and I know this sounds crazy, but out came Big Bird. I remember being frightened at first, but others came out too, and they were very friendly and led me into the closet with them. All I remember at this point is that Big Bird gave me a flavored chapstick, most likely to ease my fear because I love chapstick. And they brought me back to my bed. I went to sleep very happy over the whole experience and was not afraid anymore. I put the chapstick under my pillow after taking a tiny nibble, leaving my teeth marks just to see if it was still there in the morning. The next morning, I checked, and lo and behold, the chapstick was there, just like I remembered, and at that moment I knew for a fact it was not a dream. If it were not for that chapstick, the experience probably would not have stayed with me all these years. I tried to tell my brother, but he laughed it off, as anyone would. It sounds totally crazy. Now, after reading the other accounts of similar experiences, I am wondering if it was an abduction disguised as a friendly interaction. Another really weird phenomenon happened to me in the same house, but in a different room within the 10 years I lived in that house. I have somewhat of a timeline as we moved when I was 10. I will describe my other experience, which could have been an abduction, in another email. Thanks for taking the time to read this. I would love to read more about these Sesame Street types of events. On Tuesday afternoon of this week, a few minutes after 6 o'clock, I noticed from my window a very peculiar, solitary, vapory object in the heavens. Its position was about where the constellation of the Dipper would be at that hour, viz., due north and 35 degrees above the horizon. And magnitude and contoured in a marked degree resembled a human form, head, body, and nether limbs, the body and limbs robed in shadowy drapery. The head, which was of brighter luminosity on the crown and forehead, had thick flowing hair, and the whole figure was extended horizontally, with the head eastward and the front downward. But there was another feature quite as marked, and that was an appearance as of wings projecting upward and backward from the shoulders, and these in due proportional extent to the body and limbs. This last-named feature gave the entirety the appearance of an angel. Flying in mid-heaven, considered as a cloud, it was remarkable that it kept the same outline continuously, which is uncommon in those vapory objects. While I had it in view for a considerable time, as it progressed swiftly toward the east, the luminosity of the shadowy angel was of a golden white, and it presented a very beautiful appearance against the blue background of the sky. In addition to the startling outline of the object, the interest in it was greatly increased by its being at the time the only one visible in the whole northern heavens, except some low-lying black clouds on the horizon. I called the attention of several persons to it, one of whom discovered himself the resemblance I did. Query: was this a presage of a coming event? It reminded me of the words recorded in Mark 13:27. Then shall he send his angels and gather his elect from the four winds, and those in Daniel 9:21. Gabriel, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. One day last week, a marvelous apparition was seen near Kenai Island. At the height of at least 1,000 feet in the air, a strange object was in the act of flying toward the New Jersey coast. It was apparently a man with bat's wings and improved frog's legs. The face of the man could be distinctly seen, and it wore a cruel and determined expression. The movements made by the object closely resembled those of a frog in the act of swimming with his hind legs and flying with his front legs. Of course, no respectable frog has ever been known to conduct himself in precisely that way. But were a frog to wear bat's wings and to attempt to swim and fly at the same time, he would correctly imitate the conduct of the Kenai Island monster. When we add that this monster waved his wings in answer to the whistle of a locomotive and was of a deep black color, the alarming nature of the apparition can be imagined. The object was seen by many reputable persons, and they all agree that it was a man engaged in flying toward New Jersey. About a month ago, an object of precisely the same nature was seen in the air over St. Louis by a number of citizens who happen to be sober and are believed to be trustworthy. A little later, it was seen by various Kentucky persons as it flew across the state. In no instance has it been known to alight, and no one has seen it at a lower elevation than 1,000 feet above the surface of the earth. It is without a doubt the most extraordinary and wonderful object that has ever been seen, and there should be no time lost in ascertaining its precise nature, habits, and probable mission. That this aerial apparition is a man fitted with practicable wings, there is no reason to doubt. Someone has solved the problem of aerial navigation by inventing wings with which a man can sustain himself in the air and direct his flight to any desired point. Who is this adventurous flyer and what is his object? Are questions of immediate and enormous importance. Of course, the first impulse of the unreflecting mind will be to exclaim that the mysterious flyer is an aeronaut who has invented practicable wings and is secretly experimenting with them before making his invention public. This is directly at variance with the known habits and customs of aeronauts. Had any aeronaut invented a pair of wings, he would have advertised, long before his invention was perfected, that he was in possession of a machine wherewith to make an aerial voyage to Europe in 24 hours, and that he was prepared to exhibit it for a few weeks to everyone who would pay 50 cents to see it. A little later, he would have taken up a subscription to pay the expenses of his proposed voyage in the interests of science, and would probably have published a book on the science of aeronautics. Then he would have suddenly disappeared, taking his wings with him, or accidentally burning them. And after the first outburst of indignation on the part of a swindled public, would have been totally forgotten. This has been the invariable practice of these ingenious aeronauts who have claimed to be the inventors of balloons or other apparatus capable of navigating the air. That the mysterious flying man has not followed this custom makes it perfectly clear that he is not a professional aeronaut. Beyond any question, either the flying man or some scientific person at present unknown has invented the bat's wings and frog's legs with which the flying man now sails through the air. Why has not the inventor patented his invention and had himself duly written up by the press? The reason is obvious. The flying man is engaged in some undertaking which he cannot safely proclaim. In other words, he is an aerial criminal, a fact which explains the cruelty and determination visible on his countenance. And what can be the nefarious object which this probable wretch has in view? It cannot be simply theft and robbery, for it would manifestly be impossible for him, in his flying costume, to perpetrate burglary or highway robbery, or to pick pockets. It cannot be plumbing, for obvious reasons. Neither can it be the sale of books published by subscription only. Yet the flying villain must have an object, and we have a right to assume that only a peculiarly nefarious object could induce a man to fly to New Jersey or St. Louis in hot weather, and without an umbrella or mosquito net. It has not escaped notice that of late Mr. Talmadge has been wandering in the West in search of entertaining varieties of crime wherewith to embellish his sermons. It is also known that he returned to this city just before the flying man of Kenai Island was seen. Now, if there is a man in this country whose arms and legs are fitted to endure the muscular strain inseparable from the act of flying, that man is Mr. Talmadge. He has preached for years with those graceful limbs, and must have developed and hardened their muscles to an extent which would fill every other professional acrobat with envy. What is more probable than that, Mr. Talmadge has equipped himself with wings in order to study interesting types of immorality from the lofty height of 1,000 feet. He has flown over St. Louis and Kentucky, precisely the places which might be expected to yield a rich reward to an investigator of crime. And he is now flying to and fro over Kenai Island, preparatory to preaching a scathing sermon on the wickedness and indecencies of our bathing resorts. Here we have a natural and probable explanation of the flying man, and it is earnestly to be hoped that no one, with mistaken zeal for field sports, will attempt to shoot the preacher on the wing with a shotgun. There is not a shotgun in existence which will do any good at a distance of 1,000 feet. During Vietnam, I and six other men were on a squad night patrol, setting up our temporary camp. It was nighttime. I was nervous because it was pitch black. We were very limited on light, only having the stars above. I looked off in the distance, and I could see these huge eyes staring right at us. It was not moving or making any sound. I contacted my platoon sergeant, advised him of what it is. He told me to keep calm and keep an eye on it while he gets back to me. Some minutes later, he alerted me that there are supposed to be no enemy in the area, but he will send up flares to see if it's really what I was seeing. They warned they would only release 3 flares. It might not really be necessary. A couple of moments later, 3 flares popped up into the dark night sky, and I saw this creature was now only about 30 feet away. The eyes I saw in the distance were another one. There were multiple of them, and unbeknownst to us, they had begun moving closer in the darkness. They were about 8 to 9 feet tall, large heads, eyes that were glowing just like stars. They also had 2 large antennae on top of their head, resembling some sort of insectoid. The body was like that of a man, but it kind of had scales and looked somewhat reptilian, as if burned and distorted by acid or fire. On its back, it had a small pair of wings, and on the end of its trunk, there were 2 very sharp-looking spikes and appendages which kind of resembled horns. If there was ever a mantis man, this was it. It also had claws on all of its limbs. I could see it was holding something in its claws as if it was about to swing, although I couldn't make out what it was. I froze, not believing what I was seeing, and it stood there watching me for about 5 minutes, just lingering before disappearing back in the dark. The whole incident was maybe 10 to 15 minutes. The next day, my sergeant suggested that I should visit the commanding officer, the CEO, to give him a better look at what I saw. So the CEO asked me to sit down and draw a sketch of this creature. As I was drawing it, he looked horrified, as if he himself had already seen the thing. When I finished drawing, he said to me, "Soldier, I want you to remember that day as if it was your last day on Earth. Try to punctuate every last detail." I did so, and afterward, he told me and looked very grieved. He just explained, "I want you to forget everything that happened that night." He dismissed me. I never told anybody about this incident until now. I thought nobody would believe me, so I just kept my mouth shut. I cannot sleep the whole night. The next day I went to a medic, told him how I was terrified by what he saw. He actually gave me a shot of something that knocked me out cold for 7 hours, but not really sleep. I never had any other incidents with this creature, but I have heard of stories from friends who served over there during Vietnam as well. They told me they were terrified by this creature, running away from it, but it had chased them and actually eaten several other men. One of my friends explained to me how one of these creatures had jumped on their friends and drowned them in one of the rivers. It was like no other mantis or creature I've ever seen or heard of, even though I know there's all sorts of horrors that light in the jungles. I'm still terrified even now as I recall this event and still have problems sleeping at night. I would love to forget it, but if one day if I pass away and enter to heaven, what will happen if I see this creature again? People have been asking me for a name for this creature, but nobody knows what to call it. For the time being, I will call it a manticore, because it reminded me of a mantis man. The house I lived in with my dad, stepmom, and stepsister when I was in high school was super haunted. My dad and stepmom recently sold the house. God willing, I'll never have to go back. So I figured it was safe enough to tell some of the stories from my time there. This story is from just a week or two after we moved in. Our house sat on a pretty steep incline. In the back, there was room for a concrete patio and a little space for a vegetable garden. Past that, the ground sloped steeply up into very thick woods that were full of oak, birch, and pine trees. The woods were pretty wild, but there was an obvious path that led straight off from our property into the thicket. It ignited my stepsister's curiosity as soon as she saw it. She was a few years younger than me. I think she was about 12 when we moved in, and I would have been 14 or 15. Rita, my stepsister, was on me from the second we moved in to go into the woods with her. I used to go hiking with my dad before he started dating my stepmom, so to her that made me an expert on nature. But the thickness of the underbrush in the woods behind the house really put me off. Eventually, I gave in to Rita's constant wheedling and agreed to explore the woods behind the house. I talked Rita into putting on long pants to protect from brambles, and we set out into the woods. The incline was really steep and only got steeper the further we went in. The weeds and brambles along the forest floor were thick and cloying, clinging to our pants' legs and pricking at our skin, even through our jeans. The path we were following was narrow and roamed left to right, seeking the easiest way past trees and bushes. It was probably a path used by deer and foxes, and we struggled to follow it. I remember Rita saying, "This is so cool. It's a for real forest right behind our house," and trying not to scoff where she could hear or see it. I already felt like I was too old to play around in the woods. Those thoughts aside, I thought it was unwelcoming and king of creepy. Definitely not the kind of place I would have wanted to play even when I was her age. It was quiet in the woods. As we stepped deeper and higher, the incline just kept going up and up. We didn't hear any bird sounds, insects. It seemed like the only sound was what our feet made as they pushed through the underbrush, and what the wind made as it blew hot, sticky summer air against our backs. After a few minutes of hard going, the incline started to even out, and soon we were walking downward, the forest floor now sloping away down into a valley. "Have you ever been out in the woods like this before?" Rita asked, holding onto the back of my shirt as she cautiously descended down deeper into the woods. She was stepping carefully in my footsteps as she picked her way down. "Not like this," I told her, holding onto a crooked tree as I held a hand out to help her over a fallen log. We went to public parks mostly. They maintain their forests so they aren't congested like this. "Isn't it exciting to have this as our backyard?" she asked with a smile, her hand small and strong in mine as she hauled herself over the tree. "Yeah, it is pretty nice," I agreed, even though I privately thought that the woods were too wild to be much fun to walk in. We had only been hiking for maybe 15 minutes, and I was already starting to breathe faster due to the harsh incline. We went a little farther and heard the sound of running water. It was the first sound other than the wind that we had heard since entering the woods. "A stream," Rita exclaimed. "Do you think it's at the bottom of the valley?" she asked, excited. "Yeah, probably," I grunted. "But don't rush. You don't want to fall and get hurt in here." I kept a hand out to help her along all the same. The image of her with a twisted ankle or broken leg filled me with anxiety, and I tried to keep a hand on her as she hurried ahead of me. The stream was at the bottom of the valley, a small but fast-moving creek that was perfectly clear. The bottom was covered in a fine silt and tiny rounded stones. Looking close, we saw that there were little minnows swimming at the edges where the current wasn't as fast. We both took off our shoes and socks, rolled up our pant legs, and waded into the water. In the center, it came up to our calves, and the current was swift. The water was blessedly cool and felt great against my feet. Rita was delighted, picking up stones to put in her pockets and watching the little fish swim around her feet and brush against her toes. For the first time since we started to push through the woods, I was happy that Rita had suggested it. This was a great find and was worth the hard work to get to it. Then, seemingly out of the blue, I was struck with this strong feeling that I was being watched. It was bright even that deep in the woods. The air was hot and the wind through the trees was humid. Even so, I got a cold chill that ran down my back, and suddenly my throat and stomach were in knots. There was some part of my brain, like this primal hind brain, that pricked up and said, "Holy F, you are in danger." I froze, barely daring to breathe, and looked around as much as I could without moving my head, and I saw it. I'm still not really sure what it was. It was standing further down the stream, which steadily moved lower between the hills. It was standing up straight and perfectly still in the center of the stream watching us. Small trees and shrubs grew all along the creek and leaned into the space above it to stretch for sunlight. This made it hard to see the person or figure through them. Their face was obscured by branches and leaves, but I could make out a little of their body, and everything about it made me feel something was wrong down to the marrow.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In my bones. They were in a human shape, standing up, arms at their sides, their legs straight, knees locked. The water was visibly burbling around their shins, so they were displacing the water. But they were completely black, not like matte black, like they were painted black or wearing black clothing. Like a complete absence of light and color, as if their shape was punched out of the air around them. I grabbed Rita's arm as she danced past me. Probably too hard for someone so much smaller than me. I remember in the corner of my eye, I saw her turn to me with a narrow look, like she thought she was going to fight me. Then, she looked where I was looking and saw it. I was able to watch out of the corner of her eye as her body went through the same things mine had. She froze, her eyes went wide, her breathing shallow. Then, I felt her muscles tense and her knees bend. I realized we were like deer who had just spotted a predator. Some part of us realized we were prey, and that the next few seconds would decide if we got out of this or not. With a single shove, I pushed us both into movement. Rita took off up the embankment into the woods with a kind of grace and brutality I didn't realize she was capable of. Without her shoes, she leapt from rock to root to fallen tree like it was something she had done every day for years. Being bigger and bulkier than her, I didn't feel nearly as graceful, but I felt that my panic and the adrenaline pounding between my ears made up for it. I kept up with her, pushing her with a hand between her shoulder blades or at the seat of her butt whenever I caught up. Behind us, there was the horrible silence. We were a cacophony of crashing noises ripping through the woods and all around us. No birds sang, no insects chirped. Not even the wind whistled through the trees. That whole run back through the woods was a blur. I never once looked back for fear of what I would see, and I didn't see Rita look back either. I kept my eyes glued to her back, carefully watched her every footfall in constant fear that she would slip or fall, but she never did. Once we crashed back through the edge of the woods and into our yard, it was like the sound was suddenly turned back on. Not that Rita or I cared. We continued running as fast as our bodies would take us for the house, and once inside, we slammed the back door shut, and I slid the deadlock home. I pressed my back against the door with my breath, heaving for a moment before running to the front door and locking it as well. Then I went window to window on the first floor, making sure they were all locked, and that the curtains were pulled. Only once that was done did I collapse onto the living room floor with Rita. We left our shoes and socks by the creek, she wheezed. sticking her muddy feet into the air where I could see them. "Who cares?" I gasped back. "I'll tell Dad I lost them," I added. That was really the start of it all. After it happened, for a while Rita and I assumed we had left whatever it was down in the creek. We knew our parents wouldn't believe us, so we never brought it up to them. But we didn't leave it behind. It followed us home, and it made the next few years in that house utter hell. I have a lot more stories to tell about what happened after that. I'll work on typing up the rest in the next few days. I suppose, due to the nature of this page, a lot of you have heard of a not deer. For those of you who haven't, I pray you never find out firsthand. Oh, where are my manners? My name is Madison. I'm almost 25 years old, and I've lived in a tiny village called Ullin, pronounced Ullin, for about 2 years now. Shortly after moving here, I encountered one of these creatures said to only roam the Appalachian states. I know, it was after dark, and you're going to ask if I'd been drinking or anything. Or you're going to say that my eyes were playing tricks on me with a deer in some shadows. First of all, I was stone cold sober that night, as I don't drink, save for once every other blue moon. Secondly, this thing was standing directly under a street light. I can't be losing my mind, right? Right? Pardon me, I'm getting ahead of myself. Allow me to start from the top. It was a stagnant, humid August evening in tiny Podunk, Ullin, not Ullin. The sun had recently set, and the stars had just started to wink to life in the gradient canvas of navy blue, purple and black overhead, so I'd probably set it at about 9:15 in the evening. Things were fairly quiet as they usually are in this little town, a dog barking in the distance and the occasional whisper of a car going down the main road about a block and a half from my house. I live with my wonderful fiancé, we'll call him Kevin, as I'm not sure he'd want his identity known. And his name isn't really relevant to the occurrence, directly across the street from a lovely, small baseball park. I used to love going for evening walks through this little park, until that night. I finished letting our two dogs outside for a run and potty before their bedtime and fed our deaf cat, Lance. Then I grabbed up my double-decker cheeseburger-shaped coffee mug slash pipe. Baggy of weed, yes. I do smoke pot regularly, but don't jump to any conclusions yet. And Lucky Bic lighter, which is red with a picture of Morty Smith from Rick and Morty printed on it. And after telling my fur kids that I loved them and would return shortly, stepped out into the soupy night air. It was so warm I half considered staying inside where it was more comfortable. But I'd had a long day at work at the local dollar store, and definitely needed to get some mano e mano with the cool grass and my favorite smoking piece. Maybe that'd be mano e mano e mano? I don't know. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yes. I was crossing the street to hop over the ditch and onto the side of the park, when I heard the strangest, most terrifying sound, something straight out of a nightmare. The best way I could describe it would be like the cry of some kind of animal giving birth. But the sound was so wet and gargled, as though the laboring beast's throat were slit. I was mid-jump when this horrendous, nightmare-fueling wail, and it scared me so badly that I'd tried to stop in midair, succeeded, only to fall into the ditch, probably 3 or 4 feet deep, not including the extra 8-10 inches of height I'd had over said ditch. Pain exploded up my leg, blooming from my ankle in a sensation I know all too well as a sprain, me being a klutz and all. I let out a cry of my own, grabbing my already swelling ankle and rushing to tighten my high-top shoe with a stick pushed down on either side as a makeshift splint until I could hobble back across the street. After making the impromptu support for my injured foot, I finally looked around for the source of what had given me such a fright. That's when I saw it, standing directly under a street light alongside a paved road leading through the park. Ears perked and gaze trained directly on me. The creature was bigger than any deer I'd ever seen, even dwarfing me in its horrible stature. I'm no small woman by any means, standing at 6 feet tall and about 270-300 pounds. But this, I don't know, animal, It had to be all of my height, just at the shoulder. And the rack atop his head was a sight to behold in and of itself, or probably would have been, had it not been so badly battered, and in some parts completely snapped off at the end. At one point, I would have wagered that the beast was at least 24-26 points. He would have smashed the record for Trophy Buck, which is currently 22 points. For those who are curious, the moment I could tear my gaze away from the monstrous, darkly stained antlers crowning the beast, is the moment I really noticed that something was terribly, terribly wrong with the creature. Its fur was filthy and matted with what I can only hope wasn't the same deep crimson stuff staining its antlers, but due to how some patches of its body gleamed as though encrusted with liquefied rubies under the overhead light. My hopes are probably in vain. Yes, several chunks of its skin were completely gone, exposed flesh wriggling with plump, white little bodies that would occasionally fall away onto the paved road below. This creature was beyond sickly. He looked all but zombified. His skin barely hung on his bones, and his legs were just bent all wrong. This could have been a malformed deer that had just been abandoned young and gotten deathly ill, but I can't express enough to you all the sheer size of this thing. The bottom of its chin would easily come over the top of a brand new, big pickup truck like a dually or something. It couldn't be any smaller than a fully grown moose, I swear to you. Despite its horribly emaciated, even rotted state, it was massive, and it was beyond imposing. But the most horrifying part of all about this creature is the eyes, or eye. One had obviously been gouged out at some point, replaced by a puckered, inflamed mass of blood, pus, and more maggots. But the other one held enough malice pure, unmistakable disgust and outrage at my very existence for the both of them. I was completely frozen for what felt like just a moment, terrified beyond screaming at the sight of an almost skinless deer skull snarling with rage at me atop such a grotesquely huge body. The lack of visible muscle framing the creature gave me no illusions to the level of its strength. Somehow I just know that if the thing wants me dead, I'll be dead. But finally the creature gave me what I can only call a nod of its disgusting, antlered head, then turned away and sauntered off towards the neighboring strip of woods. I swear it felt like I was only there for about a minute or two, but when I could finally move, blink, breathe, the eastern skies were starting to lighten. I had several missed calls and voicemails from a worried future fiancé, and numerous texts as well, all wondering where I was and why I hadn't come to bed. I rushed back home across the street and wrapped up my ankle to stave off the swelling, topped off with the occasional ice pack, but I couldn't sleep for days after what I'd seen, felt, and experienced. I was getting paranoid, jumpy, and my partner, godsend that he is, started to worry. I finally tried to tell him about what happened and what I'd experienced, but predictably he thought I'd just been tripping balls. However, notice that I hadn't even reached the park before this happened. I never got to light up. I was not under any influence when I'd seen the beast, not even when I'd lost almost 8 hours of time. Why am I telling you all this now, after almost 2 years of silence? Well, the past 3 nights, I've been hearing wet, guttural snorts and these terrible, snapping scrape sounds out by the tree in the front yard. And the heavy hoof sounds that precede and succeed those noises are more befitting those of a horse, or maybe a moose, rather than any deer. I'm beginning to wonder if the beast from across the street hadn't changed his mind about letting me survive witnessing his terrible majesty. Hi, I'm a first-time Reddit user, but I've been doing a ton of research after the encounter I had today that I just can't explain. Also, I'm extremely sorry for everything being all over the place. I'm still trying to process everything that has happened. Myself and a few friends are staying in a cabin in northwestern Pennsylvania for the weekend. The cabin we are at is on a gravel road, but surrounded by 30 acres of untouched woods. Today, after eating an early dinner around 4-5 p.m., we decided to explore the woods a bit. As we were leaving the driveway, I had an extremely uneasy feeling, and the forest sounds grew extremely quiet, but then quickly got louder, so I ignored the feeling. As we stepped into the woods, we came across some very strange animal tracks. We are no strangers to animal tracks or the woods, so this was very out of the ordinary. Some of the tracks looked similar to a mountain lion, but were sunken into the dirt as if it weighed in the 600-700-pound range. Then there were some smaller tracks that looked closely to possibly a small dog, but there was just something off about them. They were too close together to be a normal dog's strides. As we continued through the forest, we started to hear some strange but not too out of the ordinary sounds. As we passed a bend in the trail, we all heard a bigger branch or twig snap, and my friend spotted something that looked extremely similar to a mountain lion, but the coloration was off. As soon as he spotted it, it disappeared from his line of sight, so we immediately turned around and hurriedly walked back to our cabin. As we started to head back, I started to feel a very sinister energy and started to almost hyperventilate. My chest was very tight, and I could barely breathe, which is very out of the ordinary for me. As we got into the cabin, I started to feel as if I'm specifically being targeted or hunted, and couldn't take my eyes off of this one patch of forest. My friends were all feeling the same energy as me, but not as intensely. We realized that the energy seemed to be circling us outside of the cabin, and when we looked outside of one of the bedroom windows, we saw a glimpse of the being far in the woods. During this whole encounter, I was struggling to breathe and was having bad chest pains that I couldn't explain. After about 2 hours of seemingly endless torture from whatever it was, the energy seemed to dissipate and leave the surrounding area. It definitely didn't feel like a mountain lion energy-wise, and even the appearance of it seemed off. We didn't hear it make any noise other than the twigs, branches snapping. It was more of feeling the energy it was putting off. The whole experience didn't feel real, and I still can't make much sense of it. I can say for damn sure it wasn't like any living creature I've ever encountered. Does anyone have any ideas of what it could be? Anything at all would help. I was camping at Heart Mountain Hot Springs. At 6:45 a.m., I was leaving my campsite by foot to use the nearest bathroom. The campsite sits above the field overlooking the road that runs west to other campsites, a field, creek, and the three hot springs pools. As I was walking out of my sight, I looked across the field and saw an animal. It was at least 200 feet away. I thought it was a wild horse, but there are no wild horses in the Heart Mountain National Antelope Refuge. This animal's body was facing me south, with its head turned slightly to its left. I thought it was a horse because it had a black mane of hair and its body was brown and shiny. It appeared to be about the size of a yearling at first. I say at first because later I saw a human man in the same location. There's a path there from the west campsites that travels to the parking lot by the east campsites, and I now believe the creature was 7 feet to 8 feet tall. It turned its head right directly toward me, then it turned its body leftward east and walked across the parking lot toward the bridge across the creek, and I lost sight of it in the trees. It was bipedal. It did not move quickly, walking with its back slightly forward and arms swinging at its sides. I later looked for footprints. The ground was too hardened to find any. I crossed the bridge and walked a little up the creek north, looking for any evidence like hair, and could not locate anything. What do you think? My only thoughts are either a person dressed in some kind of ceremonial gear or animal skins, although the height makes that unlikely, or an animal with chronic wasting disease, which also seems unlikely given that it was bipedal. My story happened many years ago in Oregon. So, my buddies and I went fishing at Crane Prairie Reservoir. On the way home, after a weekend of camping and fishing, we're driving home down Highway 58 near Eugene. We're following behind our buddies in their Toyota pickup. We end up getting stuck behind a slower semi-truck. They're up ahead of the semi, and my buddy and I were hoping to pass so we could catch up. I was riding shotgun, just enjoying the ride. I'm looking at all the beautiful scenery, the trees, rivers, and mountains. Well, I started to notice how the semi-truck would pass a patch of small trees, and the wind off of his trailer would practically blow the branches down to the side. As we entered long, sweeping left turn, the truck passed a small tree that was on the right side of the road. A small maple or something with big leaves. As the truck passed, I was waiting to see how hard the wind would blow the tree sideways. Well, as the truck went by, the tree blows sideways, and there squatting behind the tree is a Bigfoot. It's exposed and startled. It stands and turns 180 degrees and runs down into the forest. There are drainage systems along the road, and it's running along it. I could only see it from the waist up. I could clearly make out his huge arms, giant thick chest, and its big head that was sort of pointy on top. It was covered in grayish hair and big. I could make out its facial features. It ran straight up and down like a sprinter with its arms pumping. It moved to a speed no man could ever reach. I've hunted and fished for many years, and I could say without a doubt it could outrun any big game animal. It ran out of sight into the thick forest. I yelled out to my friend, "Did you see that?" But he didn't, because he was driving and looking for a place to pass. We finally passed the truck, and at the next pullout our buddies were parked and waiting for us. We pulled in, and I flung open the door and tell my story. I was all amped up with adrenaline. My buddy then tells us a story about his uncle and a Bigfoot encounter. He says he believes me and wishes he could have seen it. It's something that I can't explain, but it's something I experienced firsthand. I've always believed, but after that day, I know. Two weeks ago, I considered myself a reasonably skeptic man. I was convinced that somewhere in the vastness of this realm, another intelligent life form inhabited an Earth-like planet. Whether or not said beings have visited us was up for debate. Even though I had never personally experienced anything that could be considered paranormal, I had heard enough stories to leave open the possibility. On the contrary, the notion of the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, Yeti, Mothman, and crypto things alike was laughable. As I lay in this hospital bed, crippled, in pain and in fear, my view on monsters has drastically changed. I work night shift security for a company that had been experiencing significant vandalism. Graffiti, broken windows, litter, the types of things bored kids find fun to do. The building is located on the outskirts of a small suburban area. The backside, shop area, of the property faces a set of train tracks, a little traveled highway, and a vast forest beyond the road. The front was offices, where I spent most of my time. My duties basically involved watching TV and playing video games while keeping an ear out for any mischief outside. Once every hour, I would take a stroll around the perimeter of the building. The first few months were the most eventful. It was rare that a night would pass and I didn't have to chase some kids off. A few times these encounters got a bit dicey. I'm not a gun person, so this led to me bringing my German Shepherd pup, Chew, to work with me. He is named after Michael Schumacher. Once the hoodlums realized that my dog didn't like strangers, they stopped coming around. The job became a breeze for a while, and then some strange things started happening. It all started three Thursdays ago. It was raining that particular night. I don't make the rounds as much when it rains, as I figure nobody really cares to be out in that crap. I was working a typical 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift, and the two previous perimeter checks were uneventful. I donned my rain gear and headed out for a 4 a.m. check. As soon as I stepped outside, I was greeted by a horrific odor. A combination of feces, wet dog, and a dumpster on a 100-degree day killed my nostrils. I don't know if it was the smell or what, but Shu was hesitant to leave my side. Unusual behavior for him. As we made our way around the building, the smell still piercing our noses, my flashlight picked up the reflection of something in the grass. It was a blood trail. Shu led the way along the path. Ultimately, we discovered a deer carcass. It was absolutely torn to shreds, blood and guts everywhere. Both of its hind legs were missing. Once morning came around, and the evidence was brought to the building's owner's attention, we both agreed it was most likely some type of a prank. We buried the remains in a hole in a far corner of the property. The next night was clear but crisp. My rounds occurred more frequently. Everything was normal until around 2 a.m. It was somewhere around a quarter to half past 2 when Shu started freaking out. He was barking incessantly, and I couldn't calm him down. I walked into the shop area and immediately heard what sounded like heavy footsteps coming from the roof of the building. A brief check around the building revealed no ladders or any other means of accessing the roof. That smell from the day before was lingering, although nowhere near as pungent. Besides my personal account, no other evidence was able to be reported to the owners. Saturday night was uneventful. Sunday evening would change my life forever. After a fairly anxious but boring 3 hours, I hear a window break. Shu is scratching at the door before I can even get to it. It sounded like a back-of-the-building occurrence, so we quickly made our way there. Everything appeared normal. No kids, no pranksters, nothing. Then Shu took off in a dead sprint. He ran straight towards a small grove of trees separating the property from the train tracks. As I yelled for him to come back, he froze in his tracks about 10 feet from a cluster of 4 or 5 trees. A large, muscular arm reached out and encased his head in its palm. A quick jerk of the wrist and Shu's neck snapped like a twig. Horrified by the sight, I let out an audible gasp. Whatever this beast was, it immediately focused its attention in my direction. There are 3 entrance points to this building. The nearest 2 are locked. The only unlocked entrance point would require me to run between this monster and the door. Since it was dark, I figured I could make it. I started sprinting. I made it about 25-35 yards before I felt a tug on the back of my shirt. The strength of the grip rendered me unable to escape. I fell to the ground. My heavy breathing only served to drown out the thunderous beating of my heart. I managed to gather my bearings only to realize I was being mounted by something. I suppose it took my mind a while to comprehend what my eyes were viewing. I was being pinned to the ground by an ape. An ape covered head to toe with matted red to brownish fur. A human face with a primate body had me pinned to the earth. This creature's eyes glowed a vibrant red. We locked eyes, and it was at this point I came to the conclusion this beast was about to take my life. I vaguely remember trying to kick and punch my way out of this thing's control. My attempted recourse proved futile. My last memory is a bit clouded, but I can clearly recall looking this thing eye to eye and feeling a certainty of death. The giant beast picked me up and hurled my defenseless body against a tree. 20 to 28 feet up, the tree snapped in half. My helpless body served as an unsuccessful saw. I assume a Sasquatch is what broke my back and has left me confined to this hospital bed. My vertebrae lost its battle against said lumber. Bigfoot is real. Bigfoot kicked my ass. I'll never forget that smell. I'll never forget my eye contact with a creature spawned straight from the depths of hell. I miss Shu. And I miss my innocence.